Hello, this is Lexi with the Herald and Review from Decatur, dated Monday, February 4th, 2019. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Decatur History, Perfect Match. James Milliken, Decatur, thrived together, and his legacy remains visible today. If timing is everything, James Milliken and Decatur found each other just when each was ready to flourish. What followed from 1856 was a bank, flourishing finances, regal residence, women's home, and university before he died 110 years ago in 1909. At the time of his death, James Milliken was described as the city's greatest benefactor, having donated more than $500,000 of his personal fortune to Decatur causes. From Milliken University of the city's west side to downtown's Milliken National Bank and the Anna B. Milliken Home for Women, the Milliken name remains an integral part of Decatur's legacy. He is buried in Greenwood Cemetery, final resting place for many of Decatur's greatest citizens from an earlier age. Milliken University. With Decatur now prospering as a Midwest hub of manufacturing, agriculture, and rail, James Milliken saw a need for higher education so the city's growth could continue. He proposed an institution of higher learning, offering $200,000 in cash to get the ball rolling, provided the city and others could raise an additional $200,000. He offered to donate Oakland Park on the west side for its location. Ground was broken on March 3, 1902, and four buildings were dedicated on June 4, 1903, with ceremonies that included President Theodore Roosevelt. Milliken University remains an integral part of Decatur and attracts students from all over the globe to Central Illinois. Anna B. Milliken Home. James Milliken purchased the site of the first home for elderly women, the former Lake Hotel, which was at Jasper and Sangamon Streets. In 1892, the home was named after Milliken's wife, Anna B. Because of his financial generosity and her involvement with the home, James Milliken donated land and cash worth $40,000 to get it started. The home became the Anna B. Milliken Home and Macon County Industrial School for Girls around 1893. In 1901, James Milliken made another sizable donation of $15,000 and asked the community to match it to build a new home in the 200 block of North Oakland Avenue. The residents of Decatur rallied behind the home and made it an important part of the community. Block day parties between 1910 and 1912 weren't uncommon in raising money for the home. Bazaars and luncheons soon replaced the block parties as a fundraiser for the home. Before her death on July 29, 1913, Anna B. Milliken gave $500 every year in support of the home and served on the board of directors. The home closed in 2006. Milliken Homestead. Having established his business bona fides by 1862, Milliken purchased 22 acres for $2,200 on the city's west side. He began home construction in 1875. According to the James Milliken Homestead website, and built one of the finest homes of its day, paying $18,000, or $447,000 in 2019. According to the Milliken Homestead website, the home's exterior reflects the Italianate style, the roofs being the only exception. The roofs are mansard style and are crested with wrought iron, common to the Second Empire style. The asymmetrical facade boasts a second-floor porch on the north side and a one-story porch with pillars on the center and south sides. The home was completed in 1876, and he lived there until his death. His wife, Anna, remained in the home until her death in 1913. Today, the homestead at 125 North Pine Street is on the National Register of Historic Places. Milliken National Bank. A successful businessman, Milliken didn't come to Decatur empty-handed. A reported $75,000 personal fortune already safely stashed in his bank account when he came here in 1856. Learning of his personal funds, Decatur residents persuaded Milliken to seed a rather dormant banking community, according to History of Macon County, published in 1910. Thus, the Millikan National Bank was born in 1860, and his first contribution was established in brick and mortar. By 1910, the bank counted $5 million in deposits. While the bank has moved into history, the building itself remains a hub of activity in downtown Decatur. Never too late to improve on fathering efforts. Decatur Dad Support Group offers advice and perspective. Donnett Beckett. The father of an active 3-year-old girl, Brendan Barnett, wants to be the best dad he can for her. When he heard about Raising Up Dads, a support and education program for fathers, he thought maybe he could learn from others in similar phases of life. I wanted to see what the other fathers had to say, Barnett said, and learn from them. The new group meets at New Life Pregnancy Center for an hour every Monday. Program consultant John Power, 35, designed the meetings to help fathers find some perspective about their future. Who I am right now, that is probably what my kid is going to be in about 20 years, Power said. So if I'm not okay with who I am now, I need to take some steps. Fathers attending the meetings come from various backgrounds and all levels of parenting. Some dads come in who have a newborn and it's their first kid, Power said. I have some who have teenagers and some who are grandparents raising their grandkids and need a refresher. The meetings last about 1 hour, with the first 30 minutes devoted to child development, education, and reflections of parenting. We are looking back on the last week, what was good and hasn't been going well, or what we can work on, Power said. It's not just about discipline. It gets into care and how their relationships are with their partners and the community. Also taking care of your mental health. The remainder of the meeting is an open forum with parenting questions answered, including partner relationships. The fathers discuss situations and what worked for each. It is a good experience to be around other dads and talk about how they deal with their children, Barnett said. When they are acting out or otherwise. Brian Bowman, 41, is newly divorced from his 3-year-old daughter's mother. He said he had some skills but wanted to consider ways to improve and fulfill both parenting roles. Bowman attended Raising Up Dads to find the support and advice he needed. Sometimes you need that positive feedback and to hear, hey, it wasn't that bad, he said. Power was asked to join as a program consultant and to create Raising Up Dads. He said everything he teaches in the program is based on evidence. He has a master's degree in social work and previously worked with an organization, Boys Town, a nonprofit that supports at-risk youth and families. Currently, he is interning as a social worker in the Decatur Public Schools. His desire to help others began as a volunteer at New Life Pregnancy Center. He was also a stay-at-home dad for several years. I thought my experience could help, Power said. I've raised a lot of kids through the foster care system, and I have kids of my own. New Life offers other father support groups, including a Thursday morning faith-based program for dads and healthy parenting available for all parents by request. The fathers say Raising Up Dads is akin to the playdates many mothers attend with their children. They do a lot of the same things we do here, Bowman said. We as guys don't have that built in. Even the mothers that work, they get together and talk, Barnett said. Power has studied the cultural change of fathers' involvement in their children's lives. They are wanting to be more involved, to take some of that burden off the mom who feels like they have to do everything, he said. As time progresses, fathers are seeing the rewards of hands-on parenting. It's really cool to be a dad, Power said. The local briefs. Police: man suffers dislocated shoulder. A Decatur man left with a dislocated shoulder and several lacerations after being involved in a fight told police on Saturday he wasn't interested in talking about what happened. Decatur Police Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland said officers were summoned by Decatur Memorial Hospital staff after the 23-year-old man arrived there seeking treatment. Copeland said the man, who had scrapes on his knuckles, confirmed he had been in a fight about 1:30 a.m. in the 1400 block on East Wellington Way. but he gave very limited information and didn't want any kind of prosecution, Copeland said. Nioga man dies in head-on crash. Illinois State Police said a Nioga man was killed early Sunday when he drove the wrong way on Interstate 70 in Effingham County and was involved in a head-on collision. Police named the driver as Cecil Hardensey, 85, who was pronounced dead by the Effingham County coroner after the accident happened at 1:24 a.m. The other driver involved, a 28-year-old woman from Seganville, Texas, was injured and needed hospital treatment. A 20-year-old woman from Pontoon Beach and a man, 23, from Perryville, Missouri, both passengers in the car driven by the woman, were taken to the hospital for treatment as well. In a news release, State Police Trooper Shad Payne said Hardesty's car was traveling the wrong way eastbound in the westbound lanes of I-70 when he collided with the other westbound vehicle. Burning talk by Conservation District. Macon County Conservation District will hold a community get-together to talk about prescribed burning at 2 p.m. Sunday, February 24, 2019, in the Rock Springs Nature Center in Decatur. The information session is free and no registration is required. Guest speaker Ethan Snevely, the district's natural resource specialist, will discuss uses and outcomes of professionally controlled burning. District staff will be conducting prescribed fires in district prairies and woodlands through April 2019 for habitat management and to control the spread of invasive plant species while stimulating new growth. For more information on this and other programs, visit MaconCountyConservation.org. Kids learn farm-to-table hands-on from Farmer City. DeWitt County's 4-H Let's Get Growing Farm-to-Table for Kids STEM series will begin Wednesday, February 20th and run through March 20th. The 6-week class will meet from 3:30 to 4:45 p.m. Wednesdays in the Schneider Elementary School cafeteria in Farmer City. Part 2 is scheduled for April 3rd through May 8th. The program is open to children in grades kindergarten through 5th grade. Participants will plant and care for plants, harvest the produce, and enjoy a meal together. Something for everyone. Churches offer popcorn soup with Super Bowl viewing parties. By Tony Reed. Decatur. There are the joys of Super Bowl 53, and then there are the simple homespun addictive pleasures of popcorn drizzled in white chocolate. Firm friends Cheryl Carpenter, Cam Curry, and Amy Bledsaw were occasionally glancing at the on-screen battle between the New England Patriots and the Los Angeles Rams, but the food, especially that popcorn, plus good conversation, was scoring much more of their attention Sunday evening at the New Vision Urban Ministries Church Super Bowl party. Members of the church flock brought the food while the game was projected up on a large screen. Bledsaw saw the gastronomic mastermind behind the popcorn, which the women nicknamed after a street drug because it is so terribly tempting. "And it's fun to be here and enjoy the fellowship with my sisters and brothers," said Bledsaw. Carpenter said they don't pay airtight attention to the game, but was proud of her grasp of basic facts. "At least we know who's playing," she said with a smile. Jared Bolin, the church's men's minister, said the main thing is to gather the church family to enjoy experiences together that don't have to have evangelism with a capital E hanging over them. He said the point is that the church is a family that does things together and enjoys its own company even when the game is on. "We're all just hanging out, watching football, and enjoying good food because, yeah, we're human, just like you," he added. They were in good company as several churches in the Decatur area chose to welcome the Super Bowl into the sanctuary. The First Church of the Nazarene set the pace on the food front, with competitions for the best soup in 8 categories and lots of other prizes and giveaways to keep it interesting. The game was projected against one wall, but younger folks with calories to burn didn't have to stay and watch. Basketball hoops practice was set up in a huge space next door to the game, where 17-year-old Isaiah Eckstein was carving up the floor with basket after basket. "I enjoy football too, but well, I was born and raised in Pittsburgh and I'm a Steelers fan," said Eckstein, who lives in Cerro Gordo now. Scott Chapman, who was acting as MC of the church Super Bowl party, said the idea is often something for everyone to enjoy, including the game. alternative games, plus lots of food and fellowship. And our party is open to anyone. You don't have to go to church here," added Chapman, age 50. "It's a nice family environment where everybody is just here to have some fun." At work, power struggle with your boss won't end well. Question: my manager, Bethany, is undermining my relationship with my staff. Shortly after I was promoted to supervisor, my employees began going to Bethany with work-related concerns instead of involving me in these discussions. She tells me afterwards how I should handle their issues. When I asked Bethany to start directing employees back to me, she seemed reluctant to do so. She is apparently more interested in making friends with the staff than properly managing the department. She sometimes spends up to 2 hours a day talking with them, but if I mention it, she says she's just chatting. I was initially excited about my promotion, but now it seems like a nightmare. I explored the possibility of transferring to another department, but Bethany found out and was not happy about it. Our differences have created a lot of tension, so I'm afraid she may retaliate on my performance review. What should I do? Answer by Marie G. McIntyre. This situation has gotten so far out of hand that the real problem is being completely overlooked. Instead of tallying up the hours Bethany spends with your staff, you should be asking yourself why employees don't feel comfortable talking with you. And instead of shutting you out, Bethany should be developing your supervisory skills by involving you in these discussions. Sadly, this potential mentoring opportunity has deteriorated into something resembling a power struggle. Since power struggles with the boss seldom turn out well, you would be wise to de-escalate the conflict by asking your manager for help in addressing the central issue. For example, "As you know, I was pretty upset when my employees began going to you with their problems. But after thinking about it, I realized that I have a lot to learn as a new supervisor. If you could help me improve my ability to handle employee issues, they might eventually feel comfortable coming to me directly." If Bethany responds well to this peace offering, you will have taken a big first step back getting to the relationship on track and avoiding a bad performance rating. Question: in our department, there are two people who disagree about everything. Their constant arguing makes the rest of us uncomfortable. Our manager is a very nice person, but he avoids dealing with conflict. How can we stop these ongoing fights? Answer: since your wimpy boss isn't doing his job, the rest of you should meet as a group with your quarreling colleagues and clearly explain the problems they are causing. For example, although you may not realize it, the two of you make life extremely unpleasant for everyone else. Your arguments are distracting and create tension in the office. We don't care whether you like each other, but we do need for you to figure out how to work together. If this intervention leads to a productive discussion, perhaps the problem will be resolved. But if not, then ask your timid boss to intercede. Maybe a direct request from his staff will finally motivate him to start acting like a manager. Business achievements. Doherty returns to LLCU. Decatur. Land of Lincoln Credit Union is pleased to announce the appointment of Doug Doherty as the Business Development Officer. Doug will be responsible for reaching out to Central Illinois business owners and managers to provide financial services and products specific to each business's needs. Doherty is rejoining LLCU after a brief hiatus. He has been with the LLCU for a total of 7 years. He has served at the credit union in various capacities, including Chief Leading Officer. Doherty brings extensive experience in the business lending area and financial services. He will be working with the Oakland Avenue Decatur branch. "We are very happy to have Doug back with the LLCU family," said Robert Akers, CEO of Land of Lincoln Credit Union. "Doug is a well-liked, well-known individual within the community we serve. People trust him, and they know that he has their best interests at heart. I look forward to watching him help local business thrive and grow with the help of our products and services." Prior to his employment at LLCU, Doherty has been employed by various financial institutions for over 30 years. "I'm very happy to be back at LLCU. I've had a very warm welcome, and it just feels right," Doherty said. "I'm most excited to get out and start meeting with small business owners to show how we can help them. Financial products and services evolve and change every day. and I look forward to telling our business community that we are ready to move forward with them every step of the way. Land of Lincoln Credit Union was founded in 1947 as a full-service financial institution. LLCU serves over 30,000 members. Membership to LLCU is open to anyone who lives or works in 26 Illinois counties and their immediate family members. Land of Lincoln Credit Union offers 11 convenient locations in 8 cities to best serve the needs of its membership. As a part of the co-op's shared branching network, members also have access to over 5,000 branches and 30,000 ATM locations nationwide. For more information, visit us online at llcu.org or call us toll-free at 1-844-222-7788. Knight named DMH Employee of the Year, Decatur. Decatur Memorial Hospital employees selected Brendan Knight, Patient Transportation Valet, as the 2018 Employee of the Year. Knight, widely known for her kind approach, her steadfast commitment, and her consistently pleasant demeanor, even during the coldest months, started working at DMH in 1981 when her reputation for always putting the patient's needs began. "We only hire the best employees," said Timothy D. Stone, Jr., DMH President and CEO. "We recognize the best of the best with our Employee of the Month program, and Brenda epitomizes what it means to be an excellent employee. I'm proud to award her as the DMH 2018 Employee of the Year. She is always courteous toward patients, visitors, and staff, no matter what the situation," says Vice President of Operations David Samples. "Brenda is always cheerful and always works hard to meet the patient's expectations. Her positive can-do approach can be noted on several occasions by patients who then took the time to share their compliments. Brenda's excellent customer service skills are second to none." Last year's Employee of the Year was Cafe DMH Associate Princess Wilson. Decatur Memorial Hospital, located in Decatur, Illinois, is a 300-bed, not-for-profit community hospital that has been providing medical care since 1916 for the residents of Central Illinois. Today, DMH has more than 2,300 dedicated employees, 300 physicians, and is a designated Level 2 trauma center. DMH has been recognized 9 years as a top 50 cardiovascular hospital from IBM Watson Health. For more information, visit www.dmhcares.com. For the obituaries for today, Decatur. John Jack E. Hackle, 87, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away Saturday, February 2, 2019, at Liberty Village, Clinton, Illinois. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 5th, at Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Monday, February 4th, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery, Decatur. Memorials may be made to the Warrensburg Fire Department. Family requests casual attire. Personal finances. Retirement requirements. How much you really need to have saved for your golden years. Precision isn't always possible when it comes to retirement planning. That doesn't mean you have to wing it and hope your savings don't expire before you do. Looking at the income, living expenses, and lifespans of today's retirees can help you make the right financial moves so your golden years aren't tarnished by an unexpected shortfall. What's an average retirement cost? Government and Gallup data reveal a lot about what retirement is like for Americans today. It starts at age 61, even though many tell Gallup they plan to work longer. And based on some morbid math, the average remaining life expectancy of someone who's made it to their early 60s, 23.3 years, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, you should plan to be retired for at least a few decades. Your mileage may vary based on things such as your work, accountant versus rodeo clown, for example, diet, family health history, and participation in extreme sports leagues. The average budget for a retiree, according to Bureau of Labor Statistics data, provides even more color on what to expect when they're expecting to retire. Older households, defined as ones headed by someone 65 or older, spend $46,000 annually versus the $57,000 average spent by all U.S. households combined. The top three monthly expenses for those 65 and older are housing, 1,322, healthcare, 500, and food, $484. On average, about half of the retired household's income comes from Social Security and private and government pensions, according to the BLS, with personal savings and investment and rental income providing 6.9%. Find out how long your money will last. An online retirement calculator can project a more accurate picture of your retirement readiness. It will use your current savings, spending, and investment profile and some rules of thumb about historical investment returns, reasonable withdrawal rates, and yes, life expectancy. Most calculators assume people will live into their 90s. What if the calculator shows that at the rate you're going, you'll outlive your retirement savings? You're just not yet retired. One of the best moves is postponing your retirement party. This strategy is especially valuable for those in their peak earning years. Besides reducing the number of years you'll need to live off your savings, working longer allows more time for your investments to grow. Plus, the additional time contributing to Social Security could mean a bigger benefit paycheck down the road. Every year you postpone filing for Social Security after your full benefit retirement age, 66 or 67 for most people, your future monthly benefits check grows by as much as 8% per year until you turn 70. By Dea Vasem. Realistic revenue plan a must. Comptroller concerned about expanding unpaid bill backlog. From Springfield. Illinois Comptroller Susanna Mendoza is imploring the General Assembly to be realistic when revenue projections this year to avoid adding to the state's backlog of unpaid bills. A compromise budget passed law last year was hailed as balanced by many lawmakers, but will actually add $1.5 billion to $2 billion to the state's backlog, which was estimated about $7.3 billion as of Thursday. 1 year ago, the General Assembly passed Mendoza's Debt Transparency Act, mandating state agencies to provide accurate monthly reports on liabilities, including the escalating cost of interest penalties. This allowed budgeteers to identify which agencies lacked adequate appropriations to process their bills and account for it in negotiations. Even with the adequate debt information, Mendoza said, a budget cannot be balanced without accurate revenue projections. Shortfalls in last year's budget come from various sources, including false revenues from the non-existent sale of the James R. Thomas Center in Chicago. It also includes savings from proposals such as a pension buyout plan that will potentially fall short for the current fiscal year, the comptroller's news release said. Other key findings Mendoza listed in her report include the unpaid bill backlog continues to force the Office of the Comptroller into crisis management, impede timely bill processing, cause instability for state programs, and creates unnecessary and costly late payment interest penalties. Given that the fiscal year 2019 budget also failed to address the current backlog of bills, taking significant steps in fiscal year 2019 to pay down the backlog of unpaid bills or even keep it static is impossible. Temporary tools to manage the backlog granted under the current budget do not resolve systemic budgetary issues. Dedicated funding is needed to lower the bill backlog. Elsewhere in Springfield, while the rules for the Illinois House's 101st General Assembly were contested, then approved on partisan lines, things were more smoothly in the Senate. The upper chamber added a provision in its rules to allow any senator to file a committee amendment to a bill that provides appropriations for state spending. Previously, only the bill's sponsor or a member of the committee considering the bill could file such an amendment. State Senator Dale Ryder, a Mattoon Republican, said he was thankful for the amendment, which he said could make things interesting. Senate President John Cullerton, a Chicago Democrat, said he wanted to highlight the fact that we can handle things differently in the Senate than in the House.